This week on Pop of Culture.
With the fencing, sometimes it gets a little dicey. We have to change where we are so we don't put a sword in any audience member's face.
The Hoosier Shakespeare Festival turns 10.
We'll turn green with envy. Not one, but two garden tours happening in East Central Indiana.
And we'll find fairies hiding in their natural habitat.
This is a really outdoorsy episode, Michelle.
It really is shockingly outdoorsy, and yet here we are.
Here we are. Happy summer!
Coming up.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and from you. Become a sustaining member of IPR and support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Later this hour, we have a sneak peek into some very well-maintained gardens. But we'll start today with the Hoosier Shakespeare Festival.
Commonly called Hoosier Shakes, the festival is celebrating its 10th year. And I am thrilled to be here today with three folks from Hoosier Shakes. And Hoosier Shakes will be concluding their season coming up over here in the next couple of weeks. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's get into it with our guests. We're here with Tracy Manning. Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
We're here with Selah Granis.
Hey.
Hi, Selah. And Hi. We're here with Grace Bogue. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks to the three of you for joining us today. And Tracy is the artistic director of Hoosier Shakes. And both Selah and Grace are actors in this year's productions of Hamlet and Love's Labor's Lost. All right. So, Tracy, we'll start with you. Hoosier Shakes is celebrating 10 years this year.
Yeah, it's really incredible.
I know. Could you give us a little bit of the background of the organization and the history?
Sure. So we owe a debt of gratitude to Dr. Greg Fiebig. He was a faculty member at Indiana Wesleyan University and had the vision for bringing outdoor Shakespeare to East Central Indiana, had a heart for the opportunities that Hoosier Shakes could provide for these small communities who don't have a lot of access to theater and Shakespeare, or maybe because of cuts in arts programming and that trying to create an environment where everyone's welcome and engage with Shakespeare.
Yeah, open
and so
that to was the public. All
open to the public.
Are open to the public.
All performances. And then on the company side, to create an environment where across experiences, professional journeys, artists can rub shoulders with one another and benefit from that community of people who are advanced in their careers, in mid-careers, in early careers. So it was kind of this two-sided artistic coin, if you will.
Sure.
To say, how do we do both of these things and do them well? And so that's when we began Hoosier Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah, and the idea of it being very, I'm going to use the term bare bones, but that's not, I mean, there's so much art, obviously, that happens in the storytelling, but it's also a little unusual in that it's natural lighting, yes. And you perform on the lawn, basically.
Yes. So in theatrical terms, we call it original practices, which makes, you know, some Shakespeare artists really excited. You know, they hear that term and they're like, they geek out a little. We love it. I think what it means for audiences is that you really get to see and understand the play in people's bodies and voices and gestures. Our primary technical element is costumes. That's what helps you know who's who when.
Right. Yeah.
But it's outside under the stars, and original practices really means that we're letting the plays speak for themselves.
Yeah. And that is similar, not identical, but similar to the way the plays were done
originally.
Right. Yeah.
The
Globe.
Right.
Let's hear a little bit from our actors, Grace and Selah. What's it been like working in this type of a setting and also doing multiple roles as you are? Because you perform in both shows, correct?
Yeah, I play three different roles. So
wow.
there's a lot. it's a lot of fun because it's a challenge to kind of figure out who each person is and how to differentiate them, not just in the mm-hmm. costumes, but in the body. And I think I really enjoy it. It's a marathon every
yes,
night.
Absolutely.
It's a marathon. We are running back and forth trying to change costumes. I really enjoy the challenge. I love playing all my characters. And in Love's Labor's Lost, it's a comedy. So I get to play one role that's serious, and then the other two are more like fun characters. But
that's excellent. What is probably the biggest challenge mm-hmm. of being in these environments? Have you had to cancel a show because of weather over the course yet?
Fortunately,
yay.
No.
All right, let's knock on wood because I don't want to have brought that up.
I think it's been different performing outside. Obviously, it's different than being in a theater. And so one of my costumes, I wear a full like suit, and it can be a little, it is a relief every night to change from Bernardo to Rosencrantz because I get to take off the suit. And that's like the physical challenges. I've been in shows before where I've been able to play multiple roles, and I think the key for me is to kind of get a different physicality. Like I do my walk for each character before I did. Like I have to figure out, okay, this is where I'm leading from and what I'm doing, so that when I walk out there, this is a different person than the character that the audience has seen before. You know, I don't know. I don't usually. It is a challenge, but it's just so fun. It is something that I love to do. And I have to I had a moment where I was like acting and it was great. And I walked off and I was like, okay, I'm literally living my dream right now. It's such a lovely experience. And I love the people and it is a challenge, but I don't really think of it like
that. And it's good work, right? Mm-hmm. It's work, definitely. Doing art is work, but it's fulfilling and it's
very.
It's community based, which is the thing that I love most about it, that you share with people and connect with them that way, which is great. So Grace, what are your roles? I know you're Laertes in Hamlet.
Yes, I'm Laertes and Rosaline in Love's Labor's Lost, and then also Player Queen in Hamlet.
Amazing, So now two very different roles. And I Sayla, you mentioned that you're playing Rosencrantz as well. So obviously you're doing a little little gender thing happening here. Yeah. And Laertes is normally played by a man. And in your case, it's not. Tell me a little bit about that.
I guess I don't think of it too much as like a big thing. I'm referred to as like a brother and he, him pronouns. Mm-hmm. But really, it's just like the same with every other character, where it's just being as honest as I can about what this person is like feeling and going through.
Now, you're also involved in the fighting aspect, I know, because Laertes obviously has the big climactic fight near the end of the play. So tell us about that. What's that like being out there and being, you know, with people all around and outdoors? And what does that feel like?
It's really fun. Every night we do a little fight call beforehand with the fencing. Sometimes it gets a little dicey. We have to change where we are so we don't put a sword in any audience member's face.
Right. Now, you don't limit where audience members sit, do you? I mean, do you want them to kind of sit around you?
We do. So the play is treated a little bit like what you would think of as a thrust staging. So seating on three sides. And they come put their chair wherever they'd But we do in that fight call try to sort of establish some boundaries so that stage management and front of house staff can help audiences know where they can sit and be safe. We should shout out our fight choreographer, Scott Russell, Indiana-based fight choreographer, who's done a great job with Hamlet.
He's great.
He is great. We and he also Scott. Directed Love's Labor's Lost.
Yes, he did. Fantastic. Now, to go back to something that Tracy had mentioned earlier, that part of the company goals, right, is to have a company of actors, some of whom are beginning their careers, some of whom are mid-career, some of whom are established. What have you learned from your peers in that situation?
Oh, well, it's a lot of just like different approaches to the work. I mean, I'm used to doing a lot of shows at Ball State where everybody's train the same way. So it's fun to work with people that have different like acting training. Mm-hmm. And then also some people that are further along in their career. There are a few people that are living in Chicago. I want to live in Chicago.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Hearing them talk about that has been really, really interesting.
And getting some practical advice from them probably.
Yes, very much so.
Now, Sayla, what about you?
I think the main thing is that it's just like opened my eyes to so many possibilities of where my life could go and what I could do. I think I kind of came into college not entirely sure about acting, and slowly I've been like, okay, this is real. This is something that I can do. This is a dream that can be a reality. Mm. And I think just seeing some of these people and the work that they've put in and the work that they do, I'd say the main thing it's giving me is just like hope about what I can do and the life that I can have. And I mean, it's been like, it's opened my eyes, and it's been a great experience.
Wonderful. So. Tracy, why Shakespeare? Why does Shakespeare foster this kind of a communal atmosphere? And why is Shakespeare good for this type of production?
Yeah, I think the really incredible reality of Shakespeare and the reason that it stands the test of time is because it still talks about the things that are just true about us. It dissects and inspects the human condition politically, culturally, socially. Mm-hmm. It asks intellectual and emotional questions. I don't think I fully understand or can articulate why people want to go sit outside in 80 degree weather and watch Shakespeare.
But they do.
And they do it all over the world. And so there is this sort of, not only this shared community of this moment, watching Hamlet live, which is such a rarity for many, right? We hear about this play, we read it, but seeing it is just another level. Now we share that community around the world with people who are sitting mm-hmm. in parks and outdoor spaces all over the world. And I can't explain it entirely, but I know it's special.
Yeah.
I know it's special. Hamlet and Love's Labor's Lost were the two shows Hoosier Shakes had slated to do in 2020 when we were closed down by the pandemic.
Yeah.
So it felt like at our 10th anniversary to be able to bring these two plays back, arguably Hamlet, maybe one of Shakespeare's greatest plays. For many, they would declare that.
Yeah.
And Love's Labor's Lost, which is such a hilarious but lesser known play. Mm-hmm. And to put these two plays up together, I think is a treat for artists, and will be a treat for our audiences who choose to come and see them.
Absolutely. So, Tracy, how many performances do you have left? How many opportunities will our audience members have to see the shows?
There are 6 more opportunities to see Hoosier Shakes in East Central Indiana. We'll be in Jonesboro Park in Jonesboro, Indiana on the 20th and the 21st. The 22nd and the 23rd will be in Hartford City on the Square in their lovely outdoor performance space in Hartford City, Indiana. And then we'll be closing our run with both plays at Minnetrista on the last Friday and Saturday of the month.
Awesome. And what time should folks show up?
6:00 is going to be the live music show. That's half an hour. And then the plays will begin promptly at 6:30.
Awesome. Well, I cannot thank you all enough for showing up today and being with us to talk about Hoosier Shakes in their 10th year and give us a little bit of inside information about how your shows this season came about. So Grace Bogue and Sayla Grannis, Tracy Manning, thank you all so much for spending some time with us on Pop of Culture today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's gardening season, which means it's the perfect time of the year to look at someone else's well-maintained garden. Our co-host Kara Duquette spoke to 2 organizations with upcoming garden tours for the garden lover and the garden curious.
Sean Dingworth is the director of the Richmond Art Museum. Thank you for spending some time with us today, Sean.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Can you please tell us about the Richmond Art Museum Secret Garden Tour?
Absolutely. So the Secret Garden Tour started in 2000. So this will be our 26th year, which is an amazing history. This is our summer fundraiser, and the proceeds go to support our educational art programs at the Richmond Art Museum. We really focus on kids kindergarten through 12th grade. And over the years, the 25 years, this has raised $350,000 for those programs.
Oh, that's outstanding. So you have classes 4K through 12?
Yes, we do. We have a variety of programs. One of the things we do is we use our Ram Van Gogh, which is our educational van, where we take art programs into the schools because, as we know, funding for field trips isn't always there. So we do that. But we also do other programs. Every high school student at Richmond High School, and by the way, people may not know, the Richmond Art Museum, to our knowledge, is the only art museum, public art museum in the nation housed within an active public school. So we have direct contact with all the high school students, and they are required to come to the museum at least one time a year.
Excellent. I love that. I would like to know exactly, like, so where does the Secret Garden Tour take place?
It's a great question. So it is a self-guided tour. So when you purchase your tickets, which can be purchased online at richmondartmuseum.org, your ticket essentially is a map. And so you're able to start wherever you want to start. We do try to locate the gardens in close proximity to each other, so there's not a lot of driving. So you go at your leisure. You can go either Saturday, which is 9 to 3, or Sunday, 10 to 3. It is rain or shine, and you take your time and stroll through the gardens at your leisure. You get terrific ideas from other gardeners. We put on a variety of gardens. So, for example, we have one this year that we've never done before, which is just a patio garden.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Now, what will I see there? I hear there might be some artists afoot.
Yes. So this is really a component, I think, that makes the garden tour a lot of fun for people. So we invite 20 plein air artists throughout Indiana and Ohio to come and paint in the gardens. And when we put that sign-up sheet out, it fills immediately. So part of this is there is a vendor market at the Richmond Art Museum, and at the market, we will have those paintings for sale.
That's great. And I hear that you mentioned your garden's going to be a part of this.
I let the secret out.
not a secret
not
garden.
Now.
So what are some of the things we can expect to see in your garden?
Well, so mine is more of the cottage garden. So my house is 1838. What's interesting, and really why we kind of call this the Secret Garden Tour, is a lot of times the gardens are in the back of the home or back of the property. You don't necessarily see the garden immediately when you drive by. And I think that's what people will see with mine. The front is fairly traditional with sort of some formal landscaping, some window boxes. But as you walk down the side of the house and through the back gate, you will just be, I think, a little bit overwhelmed with the number of plants and the number of gardens that I have throughout.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Yeah. I like the idea of being overwhelmed with plants.
I know I feel overwhelmed right now.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be an amazing event. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about it?
Just that it is a fun event. I think that things like this are great for our mental health, to get out, to mm-hmm. walk. I love that this also creates a sense of community, getting into neighborhoods. And I think a lot of people, when they visit towns, they stick to the main roads. And this is an opportunity, I think, to see neighborhoods and see more of a city in a different view. So I really encourage people to check it out. Tickets are very affordable. It's on richmondartmuseum.org website.
Excellent. Well, the 2025 Secret Garden Tour will be Saturday, June 28th from 9 to 3 and Sunday, June 29th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. So thank you so much, Sean, for being here.
That was Sean Dingworth. He's the executive director of the Richmond Art Museum. Kara also spoke with two members of another organization with an upcoming tour.
Welcome, Sylvia Finney and Sarah Kreps of the Delaware County Master Gardener Association. And I want to thank you for talking with us today. And I wanted to ask what you do with the Delaware County Master Gardener Association, but you were just talking about your shirts. So can you start there, Sarah?
We wanted to have an organization shirt. Everyone's been asking, do you have shirts that we can wear at events? So we came up with our Delaware County Master Gardeners Association shirts. And on the back, it has our new saying that is, you're never too old to play in the dirt. So that's what we like to do. We like to play in the dirt and garden and everything like that with horticulture and gardening.
I think many of us would agree with that. Playing in the dirt is so much fun.
Oh, yes.
So grounding. So what are some of the other things your association does? Sylvia?
Well, we do lots of things in the area. We work for Minnetrista when they need help with their activities. Like, we're always there at the farmer's market, and we always have a booth there at the farmer's market. And we have children's camps in the summer. We have three of those at least a year.
We'll participate in Minnetrista's Garden Fair, and then we're also at the Washington Street Festival. We'll have a booth there where we'll have bulbs that people can take with them and plant. So,
nice.
Anytime we can get out into the community and do outreach, that's what we like to do. And then we're always up. If you have a question about a plant that you got somewhere or you're looking for a plant, just contact us and we'll try to help you out.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Delaware County Master Gardener Association Garden Tour?
Yes, I can. Well, I'm chairman of it this year, and it's going to be Saturday, June 28th from 9 until 3. We have 7 beautiful gardens. It's going to be on the garden walk.
Nice. And where are these gardens located?
Well, they're here and there all around Muncie.
Here and there and everywhere, huh?
Yep.
When you purchase your ticket, there'll be a map that you can kind of, it's go at your own pace so you can kind of figure out where you want to go and how you want to do it. But there'll be a map in when you get your ticket.
And the addresses.
We do have for the second year artists from the Muncie Artist Guild that will be in each of the gardens. We'll have Lori Lunsford has helped us with that. So there'll be artists painting, drawing in the gardens, and you can, some of them will have pictures and paintings that you can purchase from them, but they'll just be painting throughout the day.
Excellent. Yeah. A little alfresco so work outside.
Yep, it just adds something to the walk.
Nice.
And it's fun to watch them too.
Oh, I love watching people paint.
Oh, yes. And they're all talented, too. You'd be surprised how much they can accomplish just sitting there in the open.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of gardens can we expect to see? And are these local people who just are in your society?
Well, yes. They're not really members. Some of them. One of them is, but not anybody else. But anyways, just gardens from the area that want to be on the walk. And they let us know. And then we help get their gardens ready for them in advance if they need help.
One garden that I'm excited, I will tell you one garden that we have the Avondale Community Garden on our walk this year. One interesting fun thing about that is they have a group there that Jasmine Taylor does. It's called Blooming Futures. So it's the kids from the neighborhood come and garden. And so we'll actually have the kids there the day of the garden walk so they can talk to the people who are coming to see the gardens, kind of what they planted and how they did it and everything. So we'll have the kids there. So that's one that I'm excited about.
Well, that's great. Well, now what other things happen during the walk?
Well, you get to see everything in the garden. So it's really educational. Every garden's different.
Yeah. Can we expect to see a lot of native plants, I would imagine, but is there...
Well, one garden has orchids in it. Cheryl Bank has orchids in her garden, and that's where I'm going to be working in the morning. So I'm anxious to see her garden.
We do have one that has natives. It's down by the river, so they put some native plants out. Uh-huh. We've got backyard or small backyard gardens, front yard gardens. They didn't want to mow their yard, so they started turning their yard into a garden. So we've got that. So just different ideas that you can. The thing that I like about this walk is that you'll see something and you can take it back and do it in your garden.
Mm-hmm. That's when you talk about somebody turning their front yard into a garden. I have often thought that would be fabulous. Well, we look forward to seeing some gardens, and thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sylvia Finney and Sarah Kreps are members of the Delaware County Master Gardeners Association. They spoke with Kara Duquette. You're listening to Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. And we're here with a little bit of magic in the studio today. I am thrilled to welcome Kirsten Novotny. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi, Jen.
Kirsten is the theater and events manager at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. Kirsten is visiting us today to talk about the annual Fairies, Sprites, and Lights event that is happening next month at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. Yes?
Yes. So our event is the last weekend in July. This year it happens to run July 24th through the 26th. We have our usual sessions from 5 to 9 p.m. And then we have a special sensory-friendly session on that Saturday, July 26th from 12:30 to 3:30 p.m.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, this is a special conversation for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this is that this is a long-running event. Yes. My kids are older now, much older, but I have so many memories. This was one of the first things we actually did the summer after we moved to Muncie. And at that point, I didn't even have all three of them. I only had the oldest one, I think, at that point. And I just remember how incredible it was. So how long has this event been happening?
So it has been happening in some sort of iteration, kind of the what we see now since the late 90s. But
wow.
The tradition of fairies has been around since Elizabeth Ball was living in Oakhurst Home.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Elizabeth Ball was the only daughter in the family, and she lived in the Oakhurst Home. She spent a lot of time in the Oakhurst Gardens, and she absolutely loved fairies. And so she actually wrote a lot of poetry about the fairies and spent a lot of time. If you go through the garden, you can mm-hmm. actually see replicas of her dollhouse that was created for her and her cabin, which mm-hmm. is named Betty's Cabin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have, you know, a free play space in that area now. But she used to imagine in the gardens. And so we're kind of honoring her memory and her love of fairies every year.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And it's such a lovely it's such a lovely sort of gathering of kids from all over Muncie and East Central Indiana, mm-hmm. right? The times I've been, it's been we've kind of been overrun by kids in fairy outfits. And that's the idea, right? You come mm-hmm. dressed as a fairy.
Yeah. So our primary audience is 2 through 13 and their family members. So a lot of times we'll end up with a couple of littles, but a ton of family. And we invite people in dressed as fairies, dragons, hobbits. We've seen wizards. It's really magical to get to see them really engage in imaginative play.
Right, right. Yeah. And what kinds of things happen during the event? Because I know Oakhurst is a fairly large space, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can go in and explore and walk around. And what kinds of unusual things will you find there during this event?
So we do have the home open, so you can see where Betty Ball grew up and kind of explore the house and really take in what it must have been like to live in there. We have different characters throughout the garden. They're friends of the Fae, and they get to interact with the kids and kind of create the world for them and really immerse them into the atmosphere that we're going mm-hmm. for. We'll have a theater show mm-hmm. that's really suitable for young ages, and they can kind of attend and experience that. We have a little game. Mm-hmm. We've got food and beverages, and then we have a bubble garden.
So you can go and spend a full evening mm-hmm. there in the gardens and have a great family time. So talk to me a little bit more about the planning process for this, right? Because this runs for a weekend, you said, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But from what I understand, this takes a fair amount of effort for the staff over at Minnetrista, yeah?
Yeah. For most of our events, we do strive to have a 6 to 8 month planning window. This year, Fairy Sprites and Lights kicked off its planning in February.
Wow.
Yeah. So we really gear up and we meet and talk about the various aspects and the logistics, as well as the storyline and what we want to make sure that this event offers to the community.
Yeah. So for folks who have not been before to Fairy Sprites and Lights, what would you recommend? I know one of the things I recommend to people when they come in is bug spray.
Yes. Absolutely. Bug spray, sunscreen, water.
Which it seems strange because it is in the evening, correct?
Yeah, it starts at 5 p.m., but you would be surprised just how hot it has been the last few years. But I also recommend that people just, you know, come ready to play and have fun. All of the fairy houses are out in their villages.
So what is a fairy house? Because I've it's funny because I walk my dog in my neighborhood and a couple of my neighbors have little fairy houses out on their trees. And so I'm assuming they're like trying to call the fairies from Minnetrista out to our neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
What's a fairy house?
So a fairy house can be any number of things. One of the things that we love to talk about is how fairies can be just about anything. A lot of times people will ask us, well, I'm having trouble seeing them. Well, fairies do really like to be invisible sometimes. Mm-hmm. They often look like bugs. They look like wind through the leaves. But the fairy houses are oftentimes made out of natural materials, found objects. So we have several fairies who favor their little teacups, which I adore.
So when you visit the gardens, then you should definitely be on the lookout for fairy houses. Yes.
All of their houses are out for the event. It's really their big festival for the year, and they love to show off their different houses and their accessories, and they're very excited to have visitors.
Oh, wow. Yeah. But you have to be careful where you walk, right? Yes. So you don't like accidentally, you know, stumble into something or a village or something. That would be kind of scary for the fairies, don't you think?
Yes. They are pretty prepared for littles to pick the houses up and look inside and shake them about. They use their magic to kind of stabilize things.
Okay, that's
but
good.
We do encourage people to watch their feet and where they're going. We also encourage people to really bring or gather leaves and things while they're in the garden, leaves that are on the ground. Glitter is beautiful. It's sparkly. It's wonderful. It's magic. It does get into the water system and into the gardens. And it's really hard for the fairies to kind of pick up after that. Mm-hmm. So they love nature's glitter.
Good. Okay. So go light on the glitter, if at all, is what we're saying. Okay. Can you tell us, maybe give us a little bit of an introduction to some of the characters we might meet?
Absolutely. So this year's theme is fairy tale mix up. The fairies have invited some of the fairy tale friends that they have for their festival. But when they arrived, the fairies were a little bit mischievous this year. And so they've kind of mixed up their stories a bit. We've got Red Riding Hood, Jack Andy Beanstalk.
Jack Andy Beanstalk.
Thumbelina, Hatter, and the Muffin Man. They'll be out and about for you to see. And then,
do you know the Muffin Man?
I do.
Okay. The Muffin Man?
Do you know the Muffin Man?
I know the Muffin Man.
The one who lives on Drury Lane?
Yeah.
We also have a show that goes on with Mother Goose.
Okay.
And Goldilocks and the Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So that would be great.
We've been talking a lot about magic. And the thing I do want to emphasize for everyone is that despite the age range that is the target audience for Fairy Sprites and Lights, for adults who like to experience magic as well, there are lots of fun things for families to do together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. We love seeing our families walking around and really getting to play with one another and imagine the different universes and worlds.
Excellent. I thank you so much for coming in today, Kirsten, to give us a little bit of preview of what we're going to discover in this year's Fairies, Sprites, and Lights. Can you give us the dates and times again for us?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. This year, it is July 24th through the 26th from 5 to 9 p.m. with a special sensory-friendly session on July 26th from 12:30 to 3:30 p.m.
Fantastic. Kirsten, thank you so much. And please give the Fairies and Sprites my best as they gear up for their big celebration this year. And we can't wait to see what they bring to life. Kirsten Novotny is the Theater and Events Manager at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens.
It's time for What Are You Working On? And I think this is the first time in What Are You Working On history that the answer has been fireworks. The landing at Red Wing is getting ready to celebrate their second annual Independence Day on Saturday, July 5th. And here to talk about it is Corey Milholland, one of the owners of the landing at Red Wing, and Aaron Pohl, who, I love this description, everybody, Mr. 4th of July. Aaron and Corey, thank you so much for being here in the Pop of Culture studios.
Of course.
Yes, thanks for having us.
So let's start with kind of the history of this celebration. The first one was last year, and dare I say it was probably even bigger than you expected, right, Corey?
I'm not sure what we were expecting, but it meet those expectations.
And then some.
And then some.
So talk a little bit about that event, who came, what happened at the event, that kind of thing.
I can't tell you who came because I was so crazy busy, but I can tell you that we had over 3,700 adults there.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. It was close to 4,000 people attended this event.
Close to 4,000 people, and people started coming in around 8:30 a.m. getting set up for the craft vendors. We had about 25 local craft vendors there. And then the car show, the cars just started coming in. We had about 90 cars there for the car show. First 50 get a dash plaque. So they were all excited about that. And then it just was nonstop from about 9 o'clock until we were getting people out of there after the fireworks show around 11.
We ended up having to shut the gates at around 9:30 to actually stop the flow of traffic so the people inside could actually stop working and come, you know, be seated and watch the show.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So I know we talked to you last year about the landing at Red Wing. So for those who haven't heard that, and I recommend you go back and listen to that podcast episode, but tell us a little bit about the landing at Red Wing, what it is, how long it's been around, that kind of thing, Corey.
So the landing at Red Wing is known as Camp Red Wing, a former Boy Scout camp here in Muncie. It opened its doors around 1925. I'm pretty sure in about 2020, they celebrated their 95th, I think, anniversary. Wow. So the property has been around for quite some time. We have tried to keep it as much as possible, as what it's known as.
Yeah.
We have Boy Scout troops come out still and use that space.
Oh, nice.
Yes, we have older Boy Scouts come out and have reunions. We have White Stag reunions. So we're welcoming all of those Boy Scouts to come back onto the property. That property does mean so much to those individuals. And we hear all of those stories and we love to hear those stories. We just had a camp out this weekend for some Boy Scouts, and he was telling us how his grandpa actually planted the trees there on the property.
Oh my gosh.
And he was pointing out the trees that his grandfather had planted. So it is an important piece of property for locals here in Delaware County, and we want it to continue to be that.
Yeah. So lots of things going on there, but back to the big event that's going to be happening on July 5th. Let's talk about some of the things that are going to be going on. We'll get to the fireworks, Mr. 4th of July.
Hold I've got nothing but second. Time.
But I know there are going to be live music performances.
Yes. Yep. The craft vendors are, well, we'll have the craft vendors again. We have the car show from 10 to 2. You can start registering for the car show at 9 a.m. We have live music starting at 2. So 2 to 10, we will have live music. And then Mr. 4th of July is going to do his thing at 10 o'clock.
As soon as it gets dark.
Perfect segue. So how did this come about? Where did this interest in fireworks and putting together fireworks shows come about, Aaron?
I would say a good part of that's probably just genetic. I mean, what little boy doesn't like fireworks, right? It was always a hobby. I'm more of an enthusiast than anything else. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, family, friends, personal properties, you know, backyard, what you have. I would put shows together and a lot of people would come and watch. And over the years, it just grew, actually pretty quickly. It got to the point where 500 to 1,000 people would show up at my house, like a block party out there in the county. And I would have food trucks come and feed everybody. And it just kind of escalated one year after another, right? You never want it to be smaller. So yeah. Through networking in the community, I made friends with professional pyrotechnics, wholesalers, if you will, where I was able to buy in bulk and get more product. And before you know it, Slade and Corey had actually come to a show at my house.
Slade and Corey Milholland are the owners of the Landing at Red Wing.
And their kids sat there and watched it. And at the end of it, Slade came and found me. And he's like, man, what you're doing is special. We need to come together and do this public, like for the community.
Wow. Now, it says here on my notes, 45-minute fireworks show?
Yeah, it can be. I believe last year's I had close to 40 minutes long. What's different about what I do is I'm able to do it with consumer product. I don't do any professional displays.
Okay.
That enables me the ability to take more product and stretch it out longer. A lot of people sometimes, for whatever reason, can, for lack of a better term, complain if they go to a public display and it's only 7 or 8 minutes long. And what some people don't realize is professional pyrotechnic displays start at $1,000 a minute. So these shows that the city or different places put on, or it's a lot of money. It's incredibly expensive.
Sure.
So I've taught myself over the years through different people. Obviously, I've had a lot of help along the way to take consumer product that you and me and Corey can go anywhere and buy and make something special out of it.
Yeah. I'm sure it's all very complicated, but I just like things to light up the sky.
At the end of the day, the goal is for, you know, I like to tell people, I like to turn, you know, darkness into daylight. And last year, I remember specifically when we shot that show, I could turn and look down the hill at the crowd and the reaction of the kids' faces and the parents, like everyone was loving it. And it was just so cool.
And why do you do this? Why is it important for you? You did it one time. Why is it important for you to continue to do this? The fireworks, the vendors, the music, the, you know, out at Red Wing. Why is that important?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that we all collectively enjoy what we're doing just as hobbyists, if you will. Mm-hmm. I know for Corey and Slade, obviously there's a lot more invested. I mean, the Landing is the focal point. We did it initially to draw attention to their business. Mm-hmm. And that was an immense success because they've seen a lot of people have reached out wanting to camp or wanting to book or wanting, you know, weddings or birthday parties, receptions. I mean, you name it. But for me personally, I get a lot of enjoyment out of putting shows on for people. It's just a hobby. It's something I really like.
Yeah. It's the oohs and the ahs, isn't
it? It is. But it's really cool, though. I mean, to see that many people come together, you know, I mean, it's the 4th of July. We can go watch fireworks anywhere.
Yeah.
But what I do is special. I know that. And most of the people who have ever come to one of my shows would agree. And I would encourage anyone that's never seen one, come to the Landing.
Yeah. I think it's awesome that it's now open to the public.
Of course.
Open to everyone. Yeah. To enjoy. So if people want more information, Corey, where can they go to get more information about the event?
They can go to www.thelandingatredwing.com/fireworks.
All right. Is there anything else we need to know about the event before we put it on our calendars?
I just want to formally invite everyone to come attend the day with us. Spend your day with us and find out for yourself what it's about. It's a beautiful piece of property. Aaron does an amazing job, and it's a good time for everyone.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michelle, it's summertime in East Central Indiana,
yes.
And we've got all kinds of things on our calendar, so let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Steve Earle is performing Saturday, June 21st at Anderson's Paramount Theater. The alt country music begins at 7:30 p.m., Steve Earle is the man behind Copperhead Road and many other great tunes.
Love that song.
Yeah.
Join the Muncie Public Library Friday, June 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. for a summer solstice celebration at the Maring Hunt Gardens. There will be lots of fun family activities, laughter yoga with Zokawa, the Center for Happiness, Shamaniacs drum troupe, garden tours, and yard games. Oh, and so much more.
So much more. A community wellness festival and summer solstice celebration is planned for Saturday, June 21st at Alive Wellness Studios, 4000 West Jackson Street. This event will include yoga, Ayurveda information, and live music. Live music will be provided by Married Folk, Oxford Baking Company, Meredith Lane, and a Maybell Jam. The event is from 2 to 8 p.m.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
The Talbot Street Arts Fair is this weekend in Indianapolis. Indiana's oldest juried art fair, Talbot Street Art Fair, located on Talbot Street in downtown Indianapolis, features more than 220 juried artists from across the country. Saturday hours are 10 to 6, and Sunday you can go there from 10 to 4. TalbotStreet.org has more info.
Newcastle is having its Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 21st from 3 to 9 p.m. The Plaza and Arts Park will be filled with live music from Toy Factory and Cool Beans, speakers, performances, vendors, and more.
Oh, Jen, as a matter of fact, Indy is having its Juneteenth celebrations this weekend.
That's right.
At various locations. There's Juneteenth and Jazz Community Celebration at the Idle Jorg Museum, an Indy Juneteenth celebration at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, Juneteenth History, Health, and the Arts at the Indiana State Museum and Historical Sites, and Rhythm and Soul Fest at Washington Park. Many, many more. VisitIndiana.com has the info.
Anderson Symphony Orchestra presents Groovin' on the Green at the Anderson Country Club Sunday, June 22nd. Living Proof will perform beginning 6 p.m., and I am reading this directly from the information provided. Please bring your lawn chairs and dancing shoes.
Dancing shoes, always important. Looking ahead, the Bands of America Summer Camp, which was called Music for All before this year, will take over the Ball State campus June 23rd through Saturday, June 28th. The cool part? The public is invited to enjoy some of the great concerts throughout the week. This year's concerts include Fred Armisen.
Wait, the Fred Armisen?
Oh, yes, that Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live in Portlandia. He's also a great musician,
yes,
by the way.
Is.
He'll be there Thursday, June 26th, 8 p.m. at Emmons Auditorium. For more, musicforall.org/concerts/Muncie. For all the details.
These are some cool events. Mm-hmm. If you have a cool event, please let us know at indianapublicradio.org/contact. Then click Pop of Culture.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and from you. Become a sustaining member of IPR and support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. Our art director is Tracy Lauk, and our producer is Luke Jones, who has a singular aloe vera plant kept alive through sheer willpower. The aloe vera's not his. Our show is hosted by me, Jen Blackmer.
And me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University. It's time to take a nap.
It is time to take a nap. All right, let's try this again.